This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. I use it with my patients at the Hoffman Center all the time. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to TryZonaNow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We're here today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. We're fielding your questions, and you can get questions to us via radio program at AOL.com. Make your question succinct and of general interest, and we'll answer it. We can't do entire medical workups, keep in mind, because some people present us sometimes with very, very complex problems that it's a little bit beyond the scope of this.
Those of you who are doing that should make an appointment at the Hoffman Center.
Indeed, yeah. For more, you know, custom and individualized attention, and we're with an opportunity to interact with you and take a more detailed history and perform tests, which is, you know, otherwise, you know, we wouldn't have to go to doctors. We just listen to podcasts. Right.
Right. Okay. Barbara writes, I just love your show. Could you give us a list of vitamins that would help my husband to help support his body because he's a smoker? He's tried several times and was not successful in quitting. So what can we do for him? Thank you for all your years of knowledge you have shared with me and my family.
Okay. So we chose to answer this question because, you know, at some level I would resist answering this question because it's kind of like, you know, it's in the realm of a consultation, like what vitamin should I take,
right,
you know, for a certain health predicament that is complicated. You know, when you're a smoker, you put a lot of stress in your body. You increase your risk for cancer. You increase your risk for cardiovascular disease and so many health problems. Mm-hmm. So on a philosophic level, I would say, that, and I've been, by the way, you and I have been faced with this predicament a few times in our career. Doesn't have that often because we'll see sometimes a...
And personally,
A disconnect between some people who are, they're willing to take a boatload of supplements.
Yeah.
They're willing to eat an excellent diet.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to persist in smoking.
Right.
And so, that's usually not the case. Usually smoking goes together with being reckless about your health, eating whatever the heck you want, being indiscriminate about exercise and so on. But there's some people who paradoxically just smoke one isolated thing. They're willing to take supplements and they want an antidote to the smoking. I've come to the conclusion that there is no antidote to smoking. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. There is no antidote.
And it was once thought that taking antioxidants could somewhat blunt the adverse effects of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an attractive idea because smoking generates free radicals. But it actually backfired in the study that we mentioned in part one, which was looking at smokers in Finland. They said, well, let's give them the most powerful antioxidant we know of, which in those days, you know, many years ago, was beta-carotene, and we'll reduce their risk of cancer. And what they found to their horror is that they increased the risk of cancer.
Yes.
So what will happen is that some of these beneficial nutrients can get cooked by the free radicals that cigarettes
all
release.
All those pollutants, all they those get, chemicals.
They get altered and damaged and rendered not just neutralized, but maybe rendered into a more harmful metabolite.
Yes.
So we don't know what the effects are of some of these ordinarily protective nutrients would be in a smoker.
That's true. That's true. And I would urge anyone, look, as a former smoker, I quit in 1992.
Okay.
All you could have told me anything in my 20s. I watched my grandfather die from emphysema.
Yep.
I've seen him turn blue.
Yep.
It is frightening. That did not make me
totally
quit
irrational.
Smoking.
Totally irrational.
No, totally irrational. Yeah. And you see all the
My father had lung disease.
Oh, wow.
And you know, I used to, when I was a kid, I used to annoy my parents by stealing their cigarettes and hiding them because I didn't want them to smoke.
Oh.
And then in college, it flipped the switch. I got into some sort of self-destructive behavior, as most young people do at some point.
You try things.
And I got into smoking a little bit. And, you know, I did it for like 3 or 4 years. And then, you know.
Right, right. I don't think scare tactics work. I think you really, on an emotional level, because intellectually we all know how bad it is, but it's not enough. It's got to take the elevator down, and it's got to impact you emotionally. What worked for me, and it wasn't planned, because I had quit several times before I quit in 1992, I took up jogging.
Similar story. Keep going.
Yeah. I took up jogging.
Right.
And jogging became, you know, that wonderful runner's high, this thing that made, that it got rid of all my tension at the end of the day. I so looked forward to it, all of that kind of thing. However, I was not able to run past a certain mileage because of the amount of cigarettes I smoked that day. And now my smoking became something I resented because it stood in the way of something I needed to achieve. And that's when I said, F this.
Right. And you know something, we didn't plan this discussion, but I will tell you that I had a similar experience. This was in college. I remember this day like today. And forgive me if you've heard this story before, because I've told it on the radio. I was sitting there one Sunday morning, and, you know, I was already into my third or fourth cigarette, watching the Three Stooges. This is how productive I was on a Sunday morning. And it was like one of the first nice days of the spring, because in New York, it takes a long time to warm up, but it was a pretty day on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And one of my roommates, I had like five roommates at the time in a big apartment, and he came striding down the hall wearing his shorts. And I said, "Where are you going?" He goes, "I'm going to run in the park." And I said, "Oh, that sounds good. I think I'll go with you." And he said, "Fine." You know, so I, you know, stubbed out my cigarette, put on my shorts, and I went with him to Central Park.
Yeah.
And he took off like a jackrabbit, and I started to run around the reservoir in Central Park.
Yes.
You know what the reservoir is like.
Yeah.
It's a really nice
Beautiful.
Running course. And, you know, easily I can go like 2-3 times around the reservoir now, you know, no problem, at the age of 64. But I was 21, and I felt like there was a knife in my chest after I went about couple hundred yards. I just was like,
wow,
gone. And I said, this ain't good. And I didn't stop that day, but I just said, this has got to go. And then I became really into running. Subsequently, years later, I ran a marathon. I became a triathlete, you know, and it's nuts to destroy your lungs when you're trying to have athletic performance.
Absolutely.
So there was a counter behavior. It was a counter behavior that helped me overcome a behavior. You know, another thing for our listeners is I do recommend that people undertake nicotine replacement, because I actually think that most studies suggest that the nicotine is not the problem. You can chew the gum for the rest of your life and not come to harm. I think the mistake that some people make is they do the nicotine replacement for, you know, a few weeks, and they say, "I'm going to stop." And then the desire for nicotine and a cigarette comes up, they get stressed and they want to smoke. But if you, instead of that, you know, just reach for the nicotine gum when you feel that tremendous urge to have a cigarette, there's a substitute. Alternatively, there's an herb called Tabex. Tabex, it's from Eastern Europe. It's very popular. It's actually written up in the New England Journal of Medicine as being pretty helpful in stopping smoking.
Terrific.
It's a nicotine analog that I think is safer than the drugs that are used. They use like a lot of, it's called Zyban or Wellbutrin for smoking cessation. But, you know, I just really think that anybody who keeps smoking past the age of 40 is, you know, putting a gun to their head.
That's true. That's true. Another thing that I have found to work, and how do I know this? Patients have told me. And because of what I've learned from them, I've recommended it to other patients. It's a book by Alan Carr called The Easy Way to Quit Smoking.
Oh.
And it's apparently done some wonderful things to those of you who are ready to read it. Not afraid of, oh, if I read this book and I haven't quit, then nothing's going to work. You don't approach the book like that. You approach it while you're still a smoker.
Right.
You begin reading the book while you are still smoking.
Anybody who successfully quit smoking has tried to stop at least a dozen times. You know, and that doesn't mean that you're not going to stop. It means where there's a will, there's a way. Eventually you will. You know, so it's the rare person anymore these days who smokes completely with impunity. Most people smoke with guilt and, you know, and it's kind of like lose the guilt and, you know, stop, you know, stop eroding your self-esteem. And
yes, because that drives you to further self-destructive
behavior. It's like people who
binge,
you know, do bad things, you know, like...
Right. Well, Barbara, we gave you half a podcast full.
Right. Well, that's an important subject. I mean...
Yeah, it is an important subject, and it's still an important subject.
But, you know, I also think that by giving people supplements, we may perpetuate the smoking. It's like, okay, I'm smoking, but I'm mitigating the damage. It's
right.
Like, sorry...
This can help me instead.
Yeah, sorry.
You know,
yeah.
No,
it's like,
it doesn't.
It's like, it is a little bit like, you know, they once had a proposal that in, you know, that they were going to put certain vitamins into Thunderbird wine, you know, like those cheap wines that winos drank, you know, on Skid Row and on,
right.
You know, they were going to give them like B vitamins and certain, you know, things to protect them. And it's like, nah, not a good idea.
No. That reminds me of, you know, when I was around 18 or so, before I ever knew I wanted to be a nutritionist, but I was fixated on Earl Mindel's Vitamin Bible.
Oh, okay.
And he had all these little chapters, and one of them was the drinking man's regimen, loaded with B vitamins things like that. And I remember going, wow. But, you know, that's some old stuff.
But you know that, I mean, this, I don't want to get into it, but you know that alcoholics have... When you drink a lot, you get real depletions of certain key nutrients, magnesium and thiamine. In fact, you can develop a form of dementia due to thiamine deficiency. And when we used to pick people up off the sidewalk and they were brought to Bellevue where I was trained, the first thing we'd do is give them a thiamine injection because and it would
Wernicke's
encephalopathy.
Yeah,
because you get profound. Another subject.
Well, Barbara. Hopefully your husband will quit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the only way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, can I to extend this subject a little bit, let's say, you know, he quits, but, you know, there is a residual damage, you know, in a former smoker. So I would then recommend, you know, EGCG for cancer prevention, like a whole panoply of cancer preventive nutrients, because we know that those will be helpful. Because one carries a lifelong risk, and also to protect the lungs because of the risk of COPD and emphysema, I would urge fish oil.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that the fish oil wouldn't maybe be converted into some harmful metabolite while you're smoking. You know?
Right, right. NAC would be important, acetylcysteine.
Yeah.
Definitely vitamin C. They're lower in vitamin C.
But that's what you do after, in the aftermath.
Yes,
yes,
absolutely. All right. Well, we've got a bit of good news from Tom, suffered with sciatica.
Good, okay.
Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I really enjoy your program. I've learned so much from it. I wanted to tell you my experience. Maybe it can help someone else. Went to the doctor, had some soreness in my leg, sent me for an MRI. MRI showed disc degeneration, stenosis, and told me I should go see a neurologist. But I said, I don't want to see a neurologist because he's going to want to send me to get surgery. So I didn't go there. I got on the internet, was doing some research about the problem, and it said it might be related to the piriformis muscle.
Okay.
That can press on the sciatic nerve.
And that is the piriformis muscle.
Piriformis.
Is a very small muscle that goes crosswise in your butt. It's deep within your butt.
Mm.
And, you know, this proverbial pain in your butt often comes from a spasm of the piriformis, which can entrap the sciatic nerve that travels deep within your buttock. This actually, you know, sometimes I go to the chiropractor and say, oh, I've got that, you know, I got a pain there. He'll press on it and release it. And, you know, once it's properly diagnosed, it can be treated. It can be treated with ultrasound. It can be treated with manipulation, acupuncture potentially, but also sometimes an injection directly into it. Yeah.
Right.
So,
and he learned on YouTube how to do some of these exercises to stretch it out.
Piriformis syndrome. Yep.
It cleared up altogether in a few days. Tom, that's great news.
Bingo. Yeah. And you know, which is the problem is that if we were to take just corral a bunch of people, age 50, and without asking them how their back feels, and do MRIs on all of them, there's a large probability that a high percentage of them, maybe up to half of them, would show abnormalities in their spine that would lead a neurologist to say, you got a compressed disc, which might make them a candidate for surgery. And then if you were to ask them, and this has actually been done, this is what I'm talking about is not hypothetical, it's actually been done as an experiment. If you were to ask them the degree of back pain that they experience, some would report back pain, and some would report no back pain, and some would report intermittent back pain. There was very little correlation between the appearance of the spine and the symptoms. Therefore, don't go for MRIs right away, because you're likely to find something, and then it's going to make you believe that you have a physical impingement, when actually what you may have is a form of muscle spasm or misalignment, which can be addressed more through physical therapy or through self-care, as this
exercise,
person did, or through proper chiropractic care, which I'm a big believer in.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a Pandora's box going to get an MRI for...
It has to be discouraged, because the, the availability of this test has resulted in over-treatment and an epidemic of failed back surgeries, you know, where people believe that there's a mechanical problem when actually they just have, you know, muscle tension.
Back surgeries are so hit or miss, too.
Yeah.
Back surgery.
No, as a very last resort. I mean, if you have a, you know, if you absolutely are in excruciating pain and it's not relieved by any other measure, or if you lose, especially if you lose sensation, then, you know, there's a real serious potential for nerve damage, and you got to release the pressure on the nerve and have the back surgery.
Yeah.
We have time for one more question.
We have, actually, it's good news and a question.
Okay.
Hi, my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 gastric cancer with metastases to his liver about a year and a half ago. Did the standard chemotherapy and everything, and I was also giving him EGCG about a year ago.
Right.
Well, his liver metastases have shrunk 90% using this regimen over the past year. I was wondering, is there anything else I should be giving him? Well, besides EGCG, what do you think of phosphatidylcholine?
It's a complex situation. Phosphatidylcholine is good for the liver, but I can't say that it's good for metastasis to the liver or stomach cancer. But, you know, certainly EGCG is a wonderful anti-cancer agent, and there's others, you know, that could be employed here. But it's a complicated case, and it's also limited sometimes. Your gastric cancer patients have trouble eating. So feeding them tons and tons of supplements may be to their disadvantage.
Right.
But, you know, there's some advantage to a low carbohydrate diet, ketogenic diet,
ketogenic
in terms of arresting
diet,
the progression of the cancer. That has been found to be helpful in certain cancers. You know, I think I would rather not go into a whole panoply of nutrients, many anti-cancer nutrients that we might use. Immune supportive things like HCC.
Right.
But, you know, EGCG is a great start because it really does seem to work on gastrointestinal cancers.
I also want to mention that he's still on a chemotherapy protocol, so it's hard to be very
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to do that because, you know, is there something that could potentially interfere? That's why we'd like to customize cancer programs. And there is the potential for getting in the way of some conventional therapies, although,
Vitamin C drips.
Well, certainly intravenous vitamin C could be helpful for someone with gastric cancer. We had a good case of that, actually, recently. Remember that gentleman who came in? And he really, the first time he came in, poor guy, I thought, you know, why is he even here? Because he's not going to make it through the week. Remember that gentleman?
Yes, yeah. I do.
And, you know, it's like, oh, I guess it's nice of the relatives to bring him in, you know, with some hope that we're going to help him.
Yeah.
Well, he started to perk up. We gave him nutrition. We gave him intravenous vitamin C, and he passed away, but he had a really nice run.
He had a quality of life.
He had a quality of life.
Before he passed away, which is supremely important.
Yeah, and he was pretty happy during the time. I mean, he was utterly miserable and defeated when he came in. And so,
terrible taste in his mouth.
And his... In spite of the fact that we couldn't save him, the relatives were very happy with our intervention. And I really do think that they're faithfully supporting him in terms of making him take the supplements and bringing him for his sessions for intravenous vitamin C made a real difference.
Yeah.
And I was happy with that outcome, even though we weren't able to save him.
Right. Yes. Debbie, that's great news about your husband. And,
you know, and again, you know, yeah. low-dose naltrexone plays a role in cancers. Oh. You know, that is a possible thing. You know.
Okay.
But it has to be prescribed.
Right. Debbie, we wish you and your husband all the best of luck and the best of health.
Yeah. And, you know, people do recover from that condition, so don't give up hope.
Right. Okay.
Right. So that's all the time we have for today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It was an interesting session. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for listening, everybody.
And once again, a reminder, check out our supplement store for supplements that we personally curate and select for our patients that we make available to you via drhoffman.com. Our prices are reasonable, and our supplement choices are the best. So you can get healthy two ways. One, by listening to our podcast, and two, by utilizing the supplements that we recommend for you. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.